Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for another episode of SLMA Radio. Brought to you on behalf of the thousands and thousands of members of the Sales Lead Management Association. If it has to do with sales lead management or sales lead marketing, it probably starts here with the SLMA Radio Show. Today, as always, we're privileged to have with us the Executive Director and Founder of the SLMA, the one and only Jim Overmeyer. Hey, Jim.
Thank you, Paul. Paul Roberts is our announcer for all things in the Funnel Radio channel. Today, we have a guest host, Deborah DaCosta, founder and CEO of Direct Marketing Partners, and she has a special guest. Deborah, please.
Thank you, Jim. Hi, everybody. This is Deborah DaCosta from Direct Marketing Partners, and I am joined by my UK partner, Naomi Campbell of the B2B Lead Agency. Our companies often work together to offer B2B solutions, lead gen solutions, for customers across the US and Europe and sometimes beyond. And we're here today to address the new General Data Protection Regulation, also known as GDPR, and to touch upon the new e-privacy, as they say, across the pond regulations. I do feel very fortunate that we have the opportunity to learn from Naomi, as most of us in the U.S. are a little behind the game. Naomi is already in the trenches and has lots of great on information to share today. So we'll begin today by having her give you an update and fill you in on the latest requirements. After her introduction, we'll have a question and answer period during which I'll be posing the questions. So sit tight. This is an important and complicated topic. Naomi, I turn it over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Deborah. So, hello everyone. We help companies get ready for new data privacy regulation here in Europe. And I'd just really like to explain what steps companies are taking to get ready and why it's so important that we all do get ready before the 25th of May this year. Now, the advice I'm giving is best practice advice, really to help you consider how European data privacy regulation might affect you in America. It's not legal advice, but I do hope it provides some good practical guidance for you. So we have two imminent changes to data protection regulation in Europe. The most well-known of those is GDPR, which stands for General Data Protection Regulation. And it will be implemented in just over a month's time on the 25th of May via the Data Protection Act of 2018. The second change is to be introduced actually in May 2019, and that is called the new e-privacy regulation. So that one is still under planning. It's not going to be implemented now. So we're going to park that one for the time being and really focus today on GDPR. Now, GDPR applies to any organization anywhere that processes personal data belonging to EU citizens. Let me just give you a couple of examples, perhaps, of how it affects US companies, certainly that we work with. One of our clients is a software company headquartered in New York, and they run all of their marketing from the States. Now, some of their marketing campaigns include email broadcasts, and they come into the UK here to our UK audiences. To support those broadcasts, they have to hold UK data locally on their CRM systems and email systems and spreadsheets. And even though the marketing campaigns are prepared in the US, that means that they have to comply with GDPR. They're hosting, processing personal data belonging to our citizens here in the UK, so that means GDPR applies. Just to give you another quick example, we work with an online magazine publisher based in Texas, and they attract visitors to the website from all over the world. They have cookies that collect data from their online visitors to enhance their experience. And even though they don't sell directly into Europe, into a European audience, personal data that they collect, global visitors on their web forms and their analytics data, that all falls under GDPR. So they have to get their story right for GDPR too.
Naomi, may I ask a question? Could you differentiate between personal data and individual data? Because I just want to make sure we understand this correctly.
No problem. Let me give you some examples with personal data. Personal data, as far as B2B marketing is concerned, is the name of a contact working for any organization that you want to target who is based in Europe. So that's their name, their job title, their work email address, their work telephone number, mobile numbers, even their photo, if you scrape that sort of thing from LinkedIn. That is personal data.
What about cookies and IP addresses?
Yep, good point. That is too, Deborah. So it's all coming under GDPR. The fines, if I just warn you up front, the fines for non-compliance of GDPR are anything up to 20 million euros for the unlawful collection or processing of data. So big fines coming in from May.
How do we prepare? How do B2B marketers prepare for this?
Okay, so we recommend three steps, really. The first step is all around auditing how much personal data you hold. You need to be able to prove that you know exactly what personal data you have, where it is held, and why, for what purpose you're going to use it. So an audit as to the source of the data is absolutely essential. Needs to be done within the next 30 working days before our deadline of May the 25th. Second step, number two, is that every B2B marketeer who wants to do outbound marketing into Europe has to choose a legal basis or a reason for using and processing personal data. Now, there are two legal reasons or bases that we can use. There's consent or there is legitimate interest. So if you want to continue one-to-one marketing, you have to decide and document which legal basis for communications you're going to apply. Consent, what we mean by consent is an opt-in where somebody has agreed, given consent for you to use their data. But in most B2B scenarios, we haven't got that for all email addresses, all telephone numbers, all mailing addresses. And that's why the majority of us B2B marketeers will probably opt to use a legitimate interest legal basis. And if we do want to do that, then we'll need to complete forms called LIA forms, Legitimate Interest Assessment Forms. And they're documents that will help us really make a note of the rationale that we're using for processing personal data. They confirm the area of common interest that we'll share with our audiences, and they'll share and show that we've given due consideration to the privacy risks applicable to that personal data.
Are these forms actually filed within an agency or the...
Yeah. Every company, specific to every campaign, will need to have documented their legal basis for marketing. Absolutely.
And so that also in the US that we would have to get a hold of these LIA forms?
Yep, you will. No exception there, I'm afraid.
Okay.
They can be downloaded. They're readily available now, and they can be downloaded probably from the Direct Marketing Association, your side, certainly from this side of the pond, as well as all of the governmental websites to around data privacy. So we've covered two steps to prepare. We talked about auditing data to see what your data estate is, what you've got. The second thing is choosing a legal basis for marketing, for outbound marketing. The third step is to ensure that all of your policies for data collection and data access are compliant and published online. So in practice, what does that mean? It means lots of companies here are changing and republishing their privacy policy statements on websites. They're also changing their data capture forms so that they are fully compliant. And by a data capture form, I mean a contact us form or a brochure download form or perhaps a newsletter subscription form. They're all being updated so that they reflect data transparency. And as well as updating those forms online, it's also recommended that B2B marketers send out an information notice, perhaps an information email or an information mailer, to all database records to highlight that a change to policy has been made.
Do they have to receive word back, a confirmation, or it's just that they have to send the notice out?
They have to show evidence that they have sent the note out. Most companies in practice are sending it via email. So through email broadcast systems, they're able to track whether those messages have been delivered successfully and even opened. And also, if people are phoning to notify people that policy changes have been made, then a record is made of that phone call having taken place on a CRM.
Do you have to direct them to a link on the phone call?
Yes, that's important. So right of access is a key part in GDPR, giving people the ability to go and see what data is held on them, and also perhaps to update preferences. And that's most easily done via a unique link that they can use to update their profile. And in most best practice cases, a person's link is positioned at the bottom of an email in the email footer, or it can be given over the phone.
Yeah, I think we're seeing more and more of that here in the States too, the preferences.
There's one big thing maybe that's going to catch us out as B2B marketeers, and that will be if we don't run our data audits properly, because on many of our databases, whether we like it or not, we will find mobile numbers for people. And we may well find Gmail email addresses or Yahoo email addresses, or even home telephone numbers for contacts on our databases that maybe they have given themselves through one route or another. That type of data is categorized as individual subscriber data, and it actually falls under B2C rules for marketing, which are a lot more stringent than B2B. If when you run your audit, you find that you have individual subscriber data, it's important if you want to use it that you get consent to use it and documented consent. And if you don't have that consent, then that data needs to be removed before May from all of your systems.
It sounds like this sort of work needs to be done by everybody now. Clean up those databases of this information before the deadline hits, right?
Absolutely, yeah. As well as the practical auditing, the most important thing is to document that you have audited as well,
okay,
to show reasonable grounds for acting.
So I think I heard that in the EU, mobile numbers are more easily identified than here. It's fairly easy to identify which ones are mobile.
Absolutely. So we have some fairly generic number patterns that are used for mobile telephone numbers here in Europe, and those can be pretty easily identified on databases through data matching. So those processes are easily done and easy to catch as well. It's then a case of communicating with those individuals to get consent.
Okay, good. Well, it's not going to be so easy here, I don't believe.
One other thing to be aware of as well, we just talked about that individual subscriber data, where we've got individual data. But there's another thing that B2B marketeers need to be aware of, and that is that they can't, under the new GDPR regulation, any longer target contacts at sole trader organizations or unincorporated partnerships. So that's another thing to be careful of.
How do you know if they're a sole? Can you give us an example of a sole trader, and how do you know? Can you tell by the name or the industry?
Yeah, sure. So a sole trader really is somebody who owns business as an individual or a self-employed individual. Over here, for example, it would include catering companies, landscapers, computer repair centers or services. A lot of those are sole traders. And in terms of unincorporated partnerships, that might include dentists or doctors or solicitors. So it's just something to catch if you're targeting particularly the small to medium-sized enterprise. Scrub your lists and match your lists to make sure that the trading status doesn't fall into those two categories.
So what are we matching our lists to? How do you research the status?
Okay, third-party data providers will be able to help you with that status. So companies like DNB, for example, they'll all be able to append a status for you.
Okay. Well, this will keep a lot of agencies busy.
That really is one of the downsides, as it were, of GDPR, the extra admin that we're going to have to do initially to get up to speed. But ultimately, I believe that we will win trust from our audiences as a result of doing all of this, and they will feel a lot more secure with our use of data and our respect of their data too.
Okay. Is there anything else that you would want to add at this point before we go into a question and answer period?
I think just one last thing, and at the beginning I mentioned that there were two regulations. We've talked a lot about GDPR, which is the most immediate one. One point to mention about the new e-privacy regulation, that's the one coming in, that's likely to come in May 2019. Now, based on current predictions, the new e-privacy regulation will potentially require an opt-in consent for B2B email marketing, which will change the whole landscape for us as B2B marketeers. So that's one to put on your radar as coming soon, but some organizations are already starting to prepare for that because opting in an email database is not something that can be done overnight. So it is something that companies are keeping a watchful eye on, and some are acting already for that.
Okay. At this point, why don't we take a quick break to hear from our sponsors, and then after that, we'll go right into the question and answer period.
Many companies would like to improve their lead-to-sales pipeline results. At DMP, we have almost 30 years of B2B experience providing top-notch SDR teams to deliver inbound lead nurturing, outbound target account development, and lead qualification. With our Demand Center as a Service, DMP's staffing, process, and technology offers customers a better lead-to-sales conversion rate and ROI when compared to traditional models. If you struggle with developing qualified sales leads and setting meetings for your sales teams, let us inject the human voice to boost low-producing online and other marketing campaigns. Visit us at www.directmarketingpartners.com. B2B Lead Agency is a business development agency that finds new business opportunities for companies seeking to expand in Europe. Our on-site team of sales specialists focus on four things: appointment setting, lead qualification, event registration, and data profiling or cleansing. With a results-oriented approach to teleprospecting, blue-chip and SME companies use their multilingual team to build sales pipeline throughout Europe. Contact http://www.b2bleadagency.com/contact/.
All right, let's get started with our question and answer period. Thanks, Naomi, for that overview. I've got several questions I'd like to ask. I hope that will further clarify this topic. I'd like to start off by, what brought these regulations about?
The main reason for introducing the new GDPR was because our current EU data privacy regulation is based on a document that was first adopted in 1980, with a few later updates in 1995. So the current regulations that we have really are out of date with the media channels used today. In addition, they've been applied by all of our 28 member states in a slightly different way. So GDPR is all about updating things so that the media channels are incorporated, and also so that the regulation is better standardized across the board in Europe.
Are there any patterns to clients currently undertaking it who've already started? I mean, are you seeing the enterprise ahead of small businesses, or is everybody jumping to comply?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that enterprises did start earlier, perhaps because they have more resource at their fingertips than SMBs, but no company is exempt. We're seeing now lots of companies sending out their information notices, which specify that they're making changes. Everybody is at it now. If anything, we're being flooded at the moment with communication, both on email and mail principally, with a few phone calls also coming in. And it's good in some ways because it's enabling organizations to reach out again to their contact base and re-engage.
Okay, that makes sense. How do you help customers decide where to begin? For example, what does an audit look like, or what are the steps? How do you, in practical terms, start implementing this?
When we start talking to companies, first of all, it's a bigger exercise than they think, because we start to think about what data they have. Data on Outlook, data on Excel spreadsheets, data in purchasing systems, in HR systems, in CRM systems. So really, it's a case of sitting down and having a think as to what European data may be lurking on systems, however sophisticated, in an organization, and then pulling those together in a consolidated way. That's the first thing that we look at. It's the data estate. People then often at that point ask, well, what is it that we can't do after May? Maybe that's a starting point, so that they make sure that they avoid things that are absolutely, you know, not compliant. One of the things I say is, well, don't forget after May, we've talked about email, but don't forget you won't be able to send any SMS text messages, and neither will your salespeople, unless they have consent to do so. With mobile numbers, again, unless they have consent to be used, nobody in the organization should be calling mobile numbers, because it's so difficult to prove whether that mobile number belongs to a company who's paying the bill or whether it becomes to an individual. So the guideline is don't use mobile numbers, full stop. So those are the two things that I always say. Those are absolute cannots, can't be done after May, but let's have a look at the data first and then see where we go.
If I may ask, what percentage of the numbers are mobile numbers, or are people that you have to remove, can't call?
We typically see anything from a sort of a 2 to a 5% data set that's individual data, so that comprises mobile numbers, individual personal subscriber email addresses, and that type of data. So it's about 2 to 5% of a data set.
And does that include the do not calls, or you have a different term?
Separate. That's very much a separate thing. So you're right. According to regulation now, we cannot phone people who are on do not call lists, but that's treated separately to subscriber data.
I see. Okay. How have the regulations changed your campaigns or your customers' campaigns?
So we're an agency that work on behalf of clients. As an agency now, therefore, we have to sign new agreement forms that confirm how we safeguard our clients' data. We're known as a data processor. So there are forms that we have to fill in as part of the commercial process now to onboard new clients. In addition to that, in all of our marketing programs, we are building in more time to set up campaigns because documentation has significantly increased. And that includes sort of internal marketing administration, helping our clients with that, fill in some of those forms that we talked about earlier, as well as helping our clients really knuckle down on their data targeting strategies and make sure that everything is documented. So more time for setup. In terms of testing too, we found that we had to build in more rigorous time to test campaign response mechanisms. There's no point in rolling out campaigns if the response mechanisms, the invitations we make for people to reply and sign up for things, are not compliant to GDPR. So that all needs to be very well prepared before now. And the other thing is, at the end of campaigns, we have to make sure that we allow time for data to be processed and analyzed in the right way, and then held in a compliant way too.
How useful is GDPR in opening a new conversation, using it as an icebreaker? I think you mentioned earlier, or you implied that it was a good thing. Do you recommend performing lead gen during the process?
Yes, I do. And we're seeing companies use it very successfully. I'll give you some examples. Some charities are using it to call their corporate donors to notify them in the first instance of privacy policy changes, and then to ask for a donation or a schedule of donations through the year. So that's one example. We've seen bioscience companies also notify people of their policy changes, but at the same time check which articles and news feeds and research people would like to receive, to check preferences. So it's a good engagement starting point. From a sales point of view also, we're getting emails through just reconfirming what a client is offering and to check that they would like to see more information like that. So lots of ideas coming forward, some of them very innovative from companies that are just really trying to use that touch point to get some ROI at the same time as compliance.
I wonder if it ever backfires on them and they're getting more opt-outs than they would have otherwise.
I think in Europe we are all now very aware, even at a consumer level, that GDPR is here and is here to stay, because this does stretch into, you know, the home environment as well. We talked about B2B marketing, but when you get home at the end of the day, there will probably be another four mailers on your doorstep from theatres, from entertainment venues, asking you to do the same thing so that they can continue to stay in touch. So as a market here, we are aware of what's needed, and I think that we all see it as a positive thing.
So they're less apt to use it sort of punitively or to opt out. They want to participate.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. That's very good. My next question, as a B2B lead agency ourselves at Direct Marketing Partners, list cleansing is right at the top of our list of starting a campaign. We see, you know, the list is king, and list buildouts are becoming more and more required as we undertake campaigns. So I'm wondering, how do you apply compliance and opt-in during the process of list building? If you understand my drift. Yeah,
absolutely. As long, with all of your campaigns, as long as you have filled in your legitimate interest form, which specifies why you are list building and how you intend to use that data, and if there is a balanced interest between both parties once you've captured that data, as long as you have done that first step, then you are free to list build to your heart's content, contact companies that are not on the do not call register. You can contact them and obtain the contact level and company level information that you need. That is fine.
Even when talking with receptionists to confirm appropriateness of companies or obtain names and number, do not have to get permissions.
Reconfirm
permissions, you can just go about doing your research.
That's right. You can carry on, provided you're not trying to collect mobile numbers or personal email addresses. It's absolutely fine at this stage.
Oh, wow. Okay. What do you tell your customers about using third-party emailers or data providers, list companies? Who's responsible for ensuring that the lists are clean and compliant? This would be very concerning, I would think, especially for us in the United States. But how do we know that they're complying?
It's a very good point. You need to be very careful that the list providers you use are GDPR compliant. Go onto their websites, and most of them will actually publish that as a big headline in their top banner that they are and have taken procedures in order to be compliant. The thing that they have to have done is made it very clear to their subscription lists how their data is going to be used and passed on. As long as that has been made transparent to their subscribers, then they are able to share the data in the same way that they have for many years before. Do please go and have a look to make sure that they're GDPR ready. Some are not. Be careful, because if you use a data list that is not GDPR ready, then you are liable for any repercussions.
Oh, very important point then. What about personal data transfer and storage? I know that GDPR has stringent rules for keeping data in the EU unless there is express consent. How is this affecting companies outside of the EU? Where will they house the data? How does this work?
So in all instances, you must make it very clear if data belonging to an EU citizen is moved outside of an EU boundary. Most companies are doing that by publishing a statement as part of their privacy policy statement online, and then sending out a notification to highlight that point. So again, the spirit of GDPR is all about transparency. You need to declare that data is being moved outside the boundary and that it is being held securely.
And how does cloud storage play into that? Is that Does that differentiate it, or it's just that it's moving back and forth and that has to be disclosed? Do they have to say where it's actually being stored?
Doesn't need to say specifics of where, but if somebody asks and wants access to that information, you need to be able to provide it. It's unlikely an individual will, but you need to be able to substantiate what you're saying.
Do you foresee a change in the email habits in the EU as a result of this?
We don't see a change taking place immediately with GDPR. The big change in email marketing will take place when the electronic privacy regulation comes in May 2019. So for the time being, broadcasts will remain as they are. But in a year's time, the impact, I believe, will be that most people's broadcast lists will shrink significantly because they become consent-based. And there will be a lot more focus on message relevance as opposed to blitzing lists in a very scattergun way.
Oh, so Naomi, what's the biggest challenge for you with working on compliance?
Biggest challenge is dealing with companies who really don't know what data they have and are unable to get their stakeholders to contribute and participate in a timely fashion. I think that's the hardest task for us and for most organizations. We've talked about all of the extra admin, administration, and documentation. Coupled with that is, of course, there is extra responsibility on us as an agency, as a data processor, on companies as the data owner. Every organization has to declare who their officer is, their data protection officer is, and that person ultimately is then responsible for the security of personal data within that company. So there's extra responsibilities there too, which we all now need to face.
Sounds like a few areas to run into trouble there. Well, that leads to the question of how GDPR has affected the cost structure or will affect cost structure of marketers doing business. Has it changed the metrics? Has it changed the pricing? What do you think?
I think, you know, companies are having to build in extra time, and time is a cost, of course. So extra time for setup, extra costs to support the data screening element and perhaps even data processing elements that are needed now to get ready. It could well be now going to third-party list providers that a premium has to be paid to make sure that it's a compliant list that you get. So there are a number of costs that are being added on now to support compliance. Post-campaign processing costs, another thing to factor in if you're budgeting for campaigns for Europe. So yes, we believe that you may well see an increase of anything, you know, up to 20% in terms of cost.
My, okay. What services do you offer for compliance? Specifically, what are your compliance offerings as an agency?
We're helping companies with that first step, which really is to run their data audits and to do that as quickly and efficiently as possible. The other thing is we're offering advice on where to find forms that need to be filled in, perhaps even how to answer some of the questions on those forms. The other thing then is helping our clients just update their marketing templates, their forms. It's a very practical approach, just advising on some of those best practice elements that need to be done.
And then maybe helping them figure out the safe third-party providers? Is that also part of it?
The list now that we have built up over time of those third-party GDPR compliant vendors, that's available.
Would you please tell us about any compliance communications, the typical ones you've received both at business and personally, just to give us a sense of it and how many and what it feels like, looks like?
Of course, yes. Some, I remember actually an office supply company sent one through the other day asking us to continue to receive information and promotional material that they wanted to send. And the incentive that they added to that particular one was that if we responded to them before the end of this month, April, then our names would be entered into a prize draw. So I think people are becoming very, very aware that time is running out, and those incentive prizes are starting to creep in. That was one on a business level. Consumer level, again, local theatre wanting to see if we wanted to continue to receive their programme of events and shows coming up. Now, that's a vital piece of marketing for something like a local theatre, being able to tell people what shows are coming. All needed and all essential in order for them to carry on business as normal.
Getting back to the incentives, is that legal? Is that's not considered bribery, or as it's fair game? Fair game to offer things?
As long as there is a balance of interest, as long as it is made absolutely clear what you are signing up for, I think it's accepted and lots of people are doing it. I think they'd have to fine a lot of companies if they wanted to take that on board.
I guess before we wrap up, are there any special messages that you'd like to tell the audience and tell your US-based customers? Or
the key one it's a headline for all of us here is that we have 6 working weeks left to get our house in order for GDPR. So the time element there, it's absolutely essential to recognize that. The other thing is, do get advice. We are all, as European countries, under the banner of GDPR. It's worth getting advice from the local data commission officers to understand exactly what the criteria is. So don't try and do it alone. There's lots of information out there. We regularly refer to the ICO website here, the ico.org.uk website. It's got pages and pages of information. If you don't have time to read it all, by all means, give us a ring and we'll do what we can to help you and point you in the right direction.
Okay, thank you. This has been really interesting, if not somewhat daunting. Thank you so much, Naomi, for sharing your knowledge and experience. And I would like to remind everybody that the ideas presented here are best practices and general information rather than any kind of legal advice or framework. Naomi's provided you with the link for more information on GDPR straight from the source, which is the Information Commissioner's Office. And I'll repeat it again here, www.ico.org.uk. B2B lead agency and direct marketing partners would also like to offer you a complimentary compliance checklist or step list, which you can get by emailing me at my email address, which is ddacosta, that's D as in dog, A-C-O-S-T-A, at dirmkt.com. If you would like to ask us any questions and get advice on GDPR, please email me or call me and we will try to address your questions. I'll get Naomi involved. My phone number here in the States is 800-909-2626, extension 2002. So I'd like to thank everyone for listening to the show. And also would like to thank you, Paul, and also Jim and the SLMA for giving us an opportunity to address this important and very timely topic. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to another episode of SLMA Radio. Brought to you on behalf of the thousands and thousands of members of the Sales Lead Management Association. If it has to do with sales lead management or sales lead marketing, it probably starts here with the SLMA Radio Show. Part of the ever-growing list of programs on the Funnel Radio Network for at-work listeners like you.